Anybody remember what the key verse is? I think we've already mentioned it this morning. Key verse was Romans 12, verse 2. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. In fact, if you read it in the NLT, it says this: do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but let God transform you into a new person. And it says, the NLT says something a bit interesting. It says, by changing the way you think. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about your mental health. That's about being healthy mentally. By changing the way you think. Let me sum up this message in one sentence. Here's the sentence. Here you go. God is more interested in changing your mind than he is in changing your circumstances. Now, isn't that annoying? It would be a lot better if he would just change my circumstances. Because you know what it's like. You would rather have him just change the stuff around you. Do you know what? He is more concerned with changing you than changing the things that are going on around you. We want to want God to take away all the problems and all the difficulties. And God says, I know that's important. And sometimes he does exactly that. But he says, what is most important to me is what's happening inside you. I want to transform you into the likeness of my son, Jesus Christ. I want to change you. That is my plan for you. And that is what I want to happen. But you can never do that. You can never change until first you change how you think. You change how you think. Why do I need to change my mind? Why do I need to change my mind? Hopefully you've got one of those sheets that you can fill in as we go along. There's a few out there if you need one. But here's one of the first points. Why do I need to change my mind? Because my thoughts control my life. I don't know if you realize that, but they really do control your life. Every single action always begins as a thought. If you don't think it, it's not going to happen. Simply true. Everything starts with a thought. And that applies to the good things that you do. They start as a thought. I know, I'll do this, I'll do that. It'll be really helpful. That'll bless somebody. The good things that you do start as a thought. And the bad things that you do start as a thought. The things that we maybe never verbalize, but we do. Those thoughts control my life. Proverbs 4 says this: be careful how you think. Your life is shaped by your thoughts. Every action you take starts up here in your head. We know that's true. Don't realize how tremendously powerful your thoughts are. I don't think you've probably worked that out, but it is true. When you were growing up, here's the truth. When you were growing up, if somebody repeatedly, through their actions and their words and their attitude towards you, if they repeatedly communicated, you're worthless, you're no good, you'll never amount to anything, if that's the message you were fed, the information you were fed time and time again, that can fix in your mind and that can shape your life. That's how powerful your thoughts are. They shape your life. They really do. A lot of us unconsciously internalized some ideas about ourselves that others had that basically weren't true, were not true at all, but we internalized them, and years later we're still acting on a false information, almost a false map that we draw for ourselves. And we navigate life with this false map that isn't true and isn't accurate. And it can change our lives. Why must I change my mind? Because my thoughts control my life. Here's another reason why you need to change our mind. Because the mind is the battleground for sin. All the bad stuff that I do, all the stuff that I'm ashamed of, all the stuff that I really don't want projecting onto that screen this morning, all the thoughts and the feelings and the actions, all that stuff starts in our minds. It's where I win or lose this battle. We think temptation is something out there. You often think that, well, I was tempted by it. It's all out there. Well, temptation starts in here. It really does start in your head, in your mind. Think about this. Where do the sins of pride or lust or bitterness or resentment or anger Or, I mean, you could go on and on and on. Or greed. Or, you know, think of the seven deadly sins. Where do they all start? Do they start out there? They start in here. They start in my mind. Romans 7. My mind is the battleground for sin. I love to do God's will so far as my new nature is concerned. He's talking about when you become a believer in Jesus. But there's something else deep within me that is at war with my mind and wins the fight and makes me a slave to the sin within me. In my mind, I want to be God's servant. But instead, I find myself still enslaved to sin. That was Paul in Romans 7. And we can all identify, I think I can identify with some words in that one. War, fight, enslaved. And the stuff that I do that I'm not proud about, it feels like there's this battle going on sometimes in me between doing good or not doing good, between doing bad or not doing bad. Even the good things that I want to do, sometimes there's a battle, don't do that, look after yourself. You know, it's this sort of internal struggle all the time. He's saying here's a battle in your mind, and there's a battle for your mind as well. In a war, a battle is always most intense. Do you know where it's most intense? If there's ever a battle, if you've ever studied historical battles, the fight is always most intense over a strategic bit of ground that will tip the balance in the battle. I mean, you talk about Waterloo. You ever studied Waterloo? It was great. Waterloo, there was this little farmhouse in the bottom of this valley in Waterloo. And the battle was hottest there because whoever controlled that bit of ground was going to win this battle. And it changed hands 3 or 4 times in the battle because it was a key piece of ground. Your mind is strategic ground. And there is a battle for your mind going on all the time. Whoever wins that battle controls your life. The devil and the world wants to control your mind because it is your greatest asset. It is your most strategic thing that God has given you. Why? Why is it strategic? Here's why it's strategic. Because whatever gets your attention gets you. Whatever gets your attention gets you. Why else do I need to change my mind? Why is it so important that I change my mind? Well, here's the third one, because it's the key to peace and happiness. Your peace depends on how well you manage your mind. Often, we wish we had peace of what? Peace of mind. A lot of our anxiety and our stress is because we don't have peace of mind. We're anxious and we're thinking all sorts of thoughts that make us anxious. An unmanaged mind leads to tension. A managed mind leads to a sense of tranquility. An unmanaged mind will lead you to pressure. But a managed mind will give you peace. An unmanaged mind that is all over the place and battling all the time leads to conflict and chaos. But a managed mind leads to confidence in who we are and what we're about and what we want to do. Romans 8, verse 6 says this. If your sinful nature controls your mind, there is death. Things die in your life. Stuff dies. Relationships. All sorts of things will die in your life if you don't control your mind. But if the Holy Spirit controls your mind, there is life and there is peace. That's what it says. There's usually some resistance about now to all of this because you're thinking what I'm thinking. That's all great, but I can't control my thoughts. My mind does strange things. Weird ideas pop into it at random moments, unbidden and unwanted. I can't control my mind. Here's the truth. Nobody can control your thoughts except you. That is absolutely true. Nobody can control your thoughts except you. The devil cannot control your mind. He can put suggestions into it, but he cannot control it. It is in your hands. God won't control your mind. He gives you free will. So he will never control your mind and turn you into some automaton or robot. He will never do that. He respects you and loves you too much. He wants you to be willingly his child, not enforced as his child. You're in control of your mind, like you're in control of your TV. You just need to decide what channel you are going to switch it to. And you can do that. You can choose what you think about in the same way that you can choose what you switch to on the TV. You can choose. And it is all about that choice. It is your call. You can control your mind. God has given you that ability. So we're going to talk a little bit about three daily choices for a healthy mind. And we're going to move on to that in a second. But first we're going to sing a song. So let's just sing before we move into that. Lord, give me an undivided heart. And the Bible uses the word heart to signify all of that will and that mind and that desire that we have. And let's ask God, as we start to think about this, to give us a mind that is fixed and healthy and focused on him. Let's do that. You want to stand? Let's worship. Take a seat as we think about being transformed together. I can indeed. This one? Okay, no worries. I'm not sure that's a good thing, but there you go. Okay. It's all right. Oh, yeah. Ooh. Need your sunglasses. There you go. Get very dark in here. Right, thanks, Steve. Actually, it is possible to control it, to organize it in such a way that it is a blessing, not a problem, to deal with temptation, things like that. And we're going to talk about that at the moment. But let me give you three daily choices for a healthy mind. They're on your sheet, and fill them in as we go along. If I want to have a healthy mind, and we've looked at why it's important to manage my mind and control my mind. If I want to have a healthy mind, here's the first thing I need to do. I've got to feed my mind with truth. I've got to put truth in there, not lies. Things that are real and accurate, not things that are false and deceptive. I've got to do that. We all know the importance of nutrition, don't we? We all know, don't ask me what I ate yesterday, I didn't have a very good day yesterday, but we were out all day, so there was a McDonald's involved. Let's not go there. But you all know that if I eat that all the time, I'm in trouble. That nutrition matters to your healthy body, doesn't it? What you put in determines your health. Well, the same is exactly true for your mind as your body. I must feed my mind, not with junk, but with truth. And Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. When you know the truth, it sets you free. In Oxford, you're wondering what that's about, Oxford Analytica. Anybody ever heard of Oxford Analytica? Have you heard of them? We've heard of them. Okay. It is a group. In Oxford, there's a group called Oxford Analytica. It's made up of leading Oxford academics. So all the bigwigs, the big brains in Oxford, what they do is each day during the week they meet about 5:36 a.m., no joke, 5:36 a.m. if they're in Oxford Analytica, and they discuss reports from around the world from the last 24 hours. They're called Oxford Analytica. And then what they do is they sit around a table and they say, who do we believe is the best person to comment on this situation? It could be an election result. It could be a disaster. It could be an economic situation. It could be a country or a destabilized situation around the world. And they say, who could talk about this with wisdom and with intelligence? And by 11 o'clock every morning, Oxford Analytica contacts someone who can talk about this, and they produce a report. Businesses and governments and corporations and organizations around the world pay big money for Oxford Analytica's reports every single week. They do that. And it's based on this idea. They know that the best leaders make the best decisions because they have the best information. If you want to make the best decision in your life and lead your life, you are going to need the best information you can get. We're not Oxford Analytica. You're not Oxford Analytica. You're not Oxford or Cambridge Dons, are you? You lot, you're not. And neither am I. But how do we get the best information for the life that we want to live? Where do we find the best information? The information is right here. The information is right here. It's called the truth. Jesus calls it the truth, and this truth will set your life free. It will change your life in positive and in good and in blessed ways. It will change the lives of people around you in good ways. Matthew 4, verse 4 says, people need more than bread for their life. They must feed. You feed your body to keep it healthy. You want to feed your mind to keep it healthy. You need to feed it every day on the Word of God. That's our soul food. That's our manual for life today. When should I feed my mind with the truth? When should I do that? Should I do it once a week on a Sunday morning between 10 and sort of 12-ish? Is that enough? Once a week, that'll do. 1.5 hours a week, that's enough for feed my mind with. Rest of the week, I'll feed my mind with, well, take your pick. Is that enough? The answer, of course, is all of the time. That's when you feed your mind with truth. All of the time. The best way to eat, they reckon, the best way to eat is not one or two big meals a day. Three big meals a day is even worse. They reckon small amounts and regularly, and that's the best way to eat. The same is true with truth. You're constantly thinking about the truth. It's going to change your mind. It will do. Psalm 119 says this, I rise early to cry out for help and to put my hope in your words. That's Bible study. Cry out for help, that's prayer. Put your hope in your words, that's study of God's word. That's what it is. There are over 7,000 promises in this book. You know that? There are over 7,000. I wonder how many you've memorized. Because imagine memorizing 7,000 of those and throughout the day remind, well, God's promised me this. God's promised that. God has guaranteed this. God never lies, and he says that will happen. Imagine memorizing that and what difference that would make if you put that into your mind. 7,000 promises. Start your day with that, with hope. Promises give you hope, don't they? Promises change your mind from despair to hope. And God says, just remember my promises. Start. Maybe that's one of your goals. Maybe that will be your goal for this week about your mind. Maybe you say, I'm going to start memorizing promises from God's word. That'd be a great goal for you to have. Then you don't need a Bible. You can be at work and you can just remember them and think on them. And you can infuse your life with hope. Next verse says, when we're talking about how often should I do this, the next verse says, Lord, how I love your word. I think about it all day long. Psalm 16 verse 7 says, even in the darkest night, your teaching will fill my mind. So he's saying, I'm thinking about truth, not for 1.5 hours on a Sunday, not just on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night when I meet with other believers, but I'm thinking about it all of the time, even when I'm on my own. I'm thinking about your word morning, noon and night. That will change how you think. Here's another reason. Here's another habit that we should do to change our mind. Another choice we must make. I must free my mind from destructive thoughts. That's the second one. Free my mind from destructive thoughts. Your mind needs to be liberated. It needs to be released. Sometimes our minds are a little bit like prisoners. They're trapped. They're enclosed. We become prisoners to our own thoughts sometimes, and they start to run a little bit riot, and they start to control us, and we don't like it. We feel a bit trapped, and we wish we got out. You're a prisoner of the things that sometimes people have told you. Sometimes people are prisoners of things that they've been told. I'm a counselor, and a bunch of people who turn up at counseling are prisoners of thoughts that aren't true, that they've been told over years and decades, or that they've interpreted for themselves, and they're not true, but they've believed them. And they're a prisoner to them. They're enslaved to them. But freeing my mind isn't easy. That's because you have three enemies that are going to stop you setting your mind free. We're going to look at those three enemies right now. What's going to try and stop you from freeing your mind from destructive thoughts? Here's the first enemy you're going to face. Enemy number one is your old nature, that old part of yourself, the old habits and thoughts and attitudes and behaviors that were there and controlled you before you became a believer. Romans 7:23 says, I see in my body a principle at war. There's a battle for your brain here. With the law of my mind, taking me captive to the law of sin that dwells inside of me. Let me say it this way, because it's a bit complicated. Here's what he's saying. Have you ever knowingly engaged in self-defeating behavior? Have you ever done something that started as a thought, and you did it, you acted on it, and then you thought, why did I do that? You could sort of see it coming, and yet you thought, I knew that wasn't going to work out too well, but for some reason I just wanted to do it. I wanted to do it. I know this isn't good for me, but it's that sort of situation, isn't it? You ever been in that? I have all the time. What's going on? It's the battle for your brain with your old sinful nature. Your old nature is not your friend. It is not your best buddy. Your old nature is the source of all your bad habits and your shameful habits. That's what it is. So I may have a good intention for changing things in my life, but one of the enemies that is going to try and stop me every time, stop me changing my way of thinking, is my old nature. Here's the other enemy you're going to have to battle if you want to change your mind. You know who he is. And what does the word Satan mean? What does it mean? What's the definition of the word devil or Satan? What's behind that word? The word, he's a what? He's a, yeah, evil, but what does the word mean? Deceiver, liar. Effectively, it's the word liar. And if you want your mind to be full of truth, guess who wants your mind to be full of lies? The guy whose name is Satan. Satan wants to control your mind, but he can't. The Bible says this wonderful verse, greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. He cannot control your mind. So he's going to throw a few ideas in. And you ever had that? Where your mind just goes off on a tangent and you're really glad nobody can read your thoughts? You think, where did that come from? I don't know, maybe you've been in house group, you've considered murdering the person to your immediate right. Maybe you're doing it now. Just look at each other and smile, that's fine. But maybe you've considered, you know, you just think, oh. Or you have this thought that you if it ever came out, you would be ashamed. Either. Where did that come from? Where did that come from? He can make suggestions. He can and he does make suggestions. He makes suggestions via all sorts of sources. TV is often a source of our suggestions. People around us, he can use them. And social media, the internet, I think is an incredible source of suggestion today to so many people. And these things he uses. Martin Luther, the famous reformer, not Martin Luther King, but Martin Luther, the orchestrator of the Reformation in Europe and in England. He said this, you can't keep birds flying over your head. You can't do that. But you can stop them nesting in your hair. And he was talking about these thoughts and temptations that come to us all the time from the devil. What he means is you don't have to believe, this is what I think he means, you don't have to believe everything you think. That's the key thing to remember on this one. You don't have to believe everything you think. That's the truth. You think a lot of stuff, and a lot of it isn't true. How many of you thought somebody might be annoyed at you, or somebody might be, you know, thinking this about you, or that about you? How many of you assume stuff quite regularly? All in your head. And it's often what? It's often not true. How many of you got, I love the phrase, I've been worried about a great many things in my life, most of which have never happened. Have you ever sat there thinking, oh, this is going to happen, this is going to go wrong, that's going to... And then you get there, it's all fine. Most of what you think isn't true. A thought is not necessarily a fact, but he doesn't want you to know that. He wants you to act on thoughts that are wrong and deceptive and not true. And he wants you to behave as if they are. And the minute you do, you're in trouble. It may come from the devil, it may come from sinful nature. I do a lot of assuming and guessing. Do you do mind reading? Do you often try and think what other people are thinking? Have you ever found that fairly inaccurate science? I have realized I am a rubbish mind reader, yet I do it all the time. I'm sure they're thinking this. Nope. Wrong. But I think it's true. I think a thought is a fact, and it's not. It's not. You don't have to believe what you're thinking. It may not be true. In fact, often it's not. Often it's not. Stuff you think about yourself, stuff you think about God, stuff you think about your husband or your wife, it may not be true. I don't have to believe everything I think. That's what he's saying here. Thoughts aren't always facts. You will listen. If you listen to that one truth this morning, that my thoughts are not always facts, that will change a lot in your life straight away. It will reduce your stress and your anxiety. It will reduce a lot of problems in your life. I don't have to believe everything I think. And the third enemy, so he's all about giving you stuff that you think is true and it's not. The third enemy is the world's value system. And the world does have all sorts of weird and wonderful value systems. The culture around us will affect how you think. Is the world that is helping you, is the world, let me ask this question, is the world helping you to be a more disciplined person? Have you discovered that by listening to the world's value system, you are now a much more disciplined, organized, self-controlled person? Are you a more generous person? I don't think so. I don't think the culture of this world is promoting that stuff at all. Does anything in our society encourage self-discipline? I don't think so. Very little. In fact, every advert says this. Every advert says, you deserve it all. You deserve it right now. You don't need to save for it. You don't need to delay any gratification. Don't deny yourself anything that you want. That is how the world operates. That's the message. That's the information sometimes. And adverts work on that basis. The world has a value system. It's promoted by the media, and it's promoted by advertising, and it's promoted by celebrities. And we buy into it. 1 John 2:16, this is what it says. Oh no, sorry, that was it. All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, it's not of the Father, but it's of this world. Those three things there that the world is very keen on. And three powerful things. Money, sex, and power. The three things that the world promotes and says this will make you happy and successful. Money, sex, and power will fulfill your life. I don't believe that's true. Now that is about as countercultural as you get by me standing up in here in Godston today and saying that I do not believe those things are the be-all and end-all of life, money, sex and power. But the world will tell you consistently they are. That's the value system. That's the value system. Everything around you is not encouraging you to think smart, to think healthy and to think wise. It is not. This is an enemy that will stop you controlling your mind and having a healthy mind. How do you fight this mental battle against these enemies? 2 Corinthians. Let me read this to you. 2 Corinthians 10, which is a great passage all about your mind and this battle that goes on. Though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight are not the weapons of this world. Our weapons have divine power to demolish, there's an interesting word, strongholds. We'll talk about that in a minute. We demolish any argument and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, against the truth, really. But God tells us the truth. He will never lie to you. Against the knowledge of God, and we take captive, there's what you can do, take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. He's talking about the battle going on in your mind. He says we demolish strongholds. Let's have a look at that. I don't think we've ever talked about strongholds in church. I think it's a really key thing to talk about. I was talking this week with a bunch of ministers and it came up. I didn't mention it. It just came up. We talked about strongholds and how they get hold of believers and churches and all sorts of things. But particularly strongholds are a problem in our lives. What is a stronghold? Let me just tell you what a stronghold is, because God says my word can demolish them. Here's a stronghold. It's all to do with your mind. The stronghold is a lie that I believe. I wonder if you've got any strongholds in your life. A stronghold is a lie that I believe. So the lie might be, God doesn't really care about me or love me. So I'll do my own thing and I'll fix it myself and I won't turn to him. That's a lie. God doesn't love me or care about me is a lie. But we act as if it's true. The lie might be, I know better than God what will make me happy. That's a stronghold. Some of us have got that. I know what will make me happy, so I'm going to do my thing. I'm not going to do God's thing. It's a lie. You don't know what will make you happy as well as God does. He really knows what will make you happy. Trust me, he does. But we believe the lie. Anything I believe that is a lie is a spiritual stronghold in my life. If I believe it and act on it, it is a stronghold. A stronghold could be a value system. For instance, that word hedonism. You heard of that? That's a value system. Hedonism says the only thing that matters in my life is pleasure. If all I do is get pleasure, then my life will be great. The goal of life is just to have fun. Let me tell you, that is a lie. That's a stronghold in some people's life. Pleasure. It's a lie. Because the greatest thing in life is not to pursue pleasure. In fact, you get into all sorts of trouble if you do that. Or materialism. That's our big one in the West, isn't it? In the West, there is a value system called materialism that is a stronghold. It is a lie. And I say, I think it has a very big hold on a lot of believers. Materialism is a stronghold that this church and other churches will be battling for a long time. A philosophical worldview that says the only thing that will make me happy is acquiring more money and more things. If I acquire more money and things, my life will be wonderful. That is a lie. That is a lie. Because do you know people who have all the things and all the money and their lives are a mess? If it were true, that wouldn't be true. It's a lie. It's a stronghold. But we believe it. We think it's true. Stronghold could be a personal attitude. Could be an attitude that you've got. That could be a stronghold in your life. I'm never going to forgive. I've been hurt. I've been hurt a lot. They deserve it. That's a stronghold. If you cannot forgive other people, let me tell you, that will be a stronghold in your life that would damage your life and your mind from now on. If you cannot forgive, it is a stronghold. It is a lie that you need to defeat. I can never forgive myself. That's a stronghold. That's a lie that you are going to believe, and it will damage your life. I can never be myself, or people won't like me. If I'm vulnerable and honest and just me, everybody's going to reject me. Can I tell you something? That is a complete lie. You know what? The people I feel most comfortable with, the people that I get close to, the people that I appreciate the most in my life are people who are honest about their weaknesses as much as they are their faults. In fact, if you're one of those people who says, no, everything's fine, I've got it all nailed down, I'm great, I can do it, yeah, I will probably not get very close to you. You know why? Because I don't believe you and I don't trust you. Because nobody's like that. Nobody's perfect. Vulnerability and weakness, nobody will like me. That's a lie. And you know the people you're close to are the people who are more honest and open. They're the people that you want to be close to. So we believe these lies, don't we? And they're called stronghold. Behind every sin is a lie that you're believing. The Bible calls Satan the father of lies, and he wants to enslave you. He wants to trap you. Jesus says, I am the truth, and the truth will set you free. I want to have truth in your life. If you're going to be mentally healthy, you've got to learn how to demolish strongholds in your life. Stronghold is everything you believe that is a lie, that is not true. That's a stronghold. How do you fight the mental battle? Well, he says, first we take captive, doesn't he, in that passage in Corinthians? First we take captive. The Greek word literally means to conquer, to bring under control. It's like an invading army that lands in a town and it controls it. It takes it over. He says we make it obedient. Make every thought obedient to Christ. How do you do that? How do you make your mind mind you? How do you make your mind mind you? Because my thoughts disobey me. They often rebel. They're like this little rebel army. Hang on, let's just drag them back into order. My mind often has a mind of its own. That's what we say, don't we? That it's not behaving itself. It's not cooperating with me. I mean, while studying for this message particularly, my mind wanted to, A, go on the Xbox, B, open a packet of chili and sour cream crisps, C, pour myself a whiskey Mac, D, maybe even top that off with a few peanuts. That's what I wanted to do while I was preparing for today at one point. My mind often rebels. When I need to ponder my mind, if you're anything like me, when you need to ponder, your mind starts to do what? It starts to wander. And that's what happens to all of us. Paul says we take it captive. We take it captive. We control it. We make it obedient. You have a choice. You may not believe it, but you have a choice with your mind. Your mind has to listen to you. Don't you believe the myth? I think it's a stronghold. I can't control it. That's a lie. Your mind has to listen to you. God didn't just give you a mind, he gave you a will. He gave that to you. One of the most precious things he ever gave to you, the choice to love him or not to love him. He gave you the choice to do that. He gave you the choice to listen to him or not to listen to him. But you have a choice every single time. A part of your will can bring your mind under control. And just to explain how we often lose that battle and how that process sort of works, trying to bring your mind under control, it's a little bit like temptation. That sort of describes the process we go through. When you think about temptation, that's the sort of battleground, that's the process that we go through when we're trying to control our mind. And there's a little bit on your sheet, hopefully, about that. Let me talk to you about how temptation works. I'll do this really briefly. James 1, 14 and 15 says, temptation comes from the lure of our own desires, evil desires that lead to us. So it's that old, it's all those things inside of us, that old nature. There's the devil whispering away. There's the culture around us that's telling us fibs and telling us this will make you happy. It's not. So all that stuff combines. And then evil actions that we act upon then lead to death. Stuff in our life starts dying. Our own self-esteem starts to die. Our sense of peace starts to die. Our relationships start to die when we act on this sort of stuff. It says it leads to death. Temptation is a process. Often you often say, oh, it was a bit of a one-off. What I just did there was just a, sorry, I'm not, that's not like me. Have you ever said that? That's not like me. Well, yeah, it was. So it was you. You just did it. So not like me doesn't hold any water, really. That's not like me. It was a one-off. It wasn't a one-off. It's often a process. And a ton of stuff happens before you act on something. Have you ever realized that? A ton of stuff happens before you do anything. And it often starts up here. It starts up here. Temptation is a process. And it's in four phases. Here's the four phases. There you go. First you have a desire. Let me tell you something. No desire, no temptation. Let me give you an example. I have never, ever been tempted by cigarettes. Just never have. My dad, loved my dad, but my dad smoked from the age of 12. And I grew up in a house where smoking was... And I just didn't like it. I didn't like the smell. It just put me off. I remember someone trying to get me to smoke. I've had one cigarette between my lips in my life, and it was confirmed my worst thoughts. So, yeah, I'm not doing that. So I've never been tempted. I don't like the smell. I've never had one. So I will never be tempted by cigarettes. I'll be honest. I'm not going to be ever tempted by cigarettes because I just made that decision. Nope. Thank you very much. Cigars? That's a different thing. No, anyway. No, I'm serious about that. I do like cigars. But cigarettes, bleh. But there you go. So I'm never going to be tempted by that. Temptation doesn't start out there. No desire, no temptation. It starts with a desire, doesn't it? If you haven't got any desire for it, you're never going to be tempted by it. Temptation doesn't start out here. It starts inside you. It starts with a natural, normal, human desire. And often what it is, it's a desire to fulfill some legitimate need. Let me give you an example. I want to feel loved. Yeah, that's a legitimate human need. Everybody on the planet is made to want to feel loved. But sometimes what we do is we try and fulfill that legitimate need in some really illegitimate ways. I want to feel loved. And that's the desire. And we try and fulfill it in ways that aren't helpful, in the wrong way. Often a desire is a bit runaway as well. A desire is like out of control. It starts to take over. It starts to consume us. We can't get it off our mind. That's when temptation starts. That's how it works. So desire, the second bit is doubt. You begin to doubt two things, I think, with doubt in temptation. And this all happens before you act. You doubt that God loves you. So God's not going to take care of me. I'm going to have to do this myself. And you doubt that God knows best. God doesn't really know what will please me or fulfill me or make my life complete. God doesn't know best. And isn't that what happened in the garden? Isn't that what happened in Adam and Eve? The first temptation? Did God really say? He doesn't know what I need. He doesn't really care about me. Does God really? I don't think so. So we doubt he loves us and we doubt he knows best. And every time we give in to a temptation, we're believing that lie. Because he does love you. And he does know best. He does. So, second bit, stage in the process is doubt. The third is deception. We start to replace God's truth with a lie. The devil said to Adam, oh, you won't die if you eat that. That story is all about this. It's, oh no, you don't need to believe God. You don't believe God. I'll just tell you a little fib. That's not what God said. And we believe a lie. So deception is the other bit. Notice that it says in that verse in Corinthians, I am lured. Temptation comes from the lure of our evil desires. That's a fishing term. How many of you do fishing? What's a lure? What's a lure for a fish? What is it? Yeah. It looks like a fly, doesn't it? But it's not a fly. It's something masquerading as something else. And that's how we get hooked. That's how we get deceived. We think it's one thing, but it really isn't. We think it's one thing, but it's a clever copy. And often we fall for that. That's the process we go through. We fall for a clever copy. We think it's happiness, but it really turns out not to be. We think it's love, which we want. It turns out it's really not. We think it's fulfillment. But once we get it, we still feel as unfulfilled as we did before. Temptation always looks better than it is. It promised to satisfy. It never does. It's like a lure. It's a copy that turns out not to be what you thought it was. And it hooks you. It gets you. Step four. And this is where you then act. And we say, oh, it was just a one-off. Actually, all that other stuff happened before you got there. A whole process of stuff happened before you got to part four, which is disobedience, which is where you act on the lie. Temptation isn't a sin. Jesus was tempted. It can't be a sin. Temptation isn't a sin. Disobedience turns temptation into it. We begin in the mind, and it gets translated into real action in our lives. Bible says, after desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin. So it's that desire and doubt. We doubt God. We get deceived. We think it's something that we really want that will work, and it doesn't. And then we disobey. After desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and the end result is death. Stuff then dies in my life. When I sin, something always dies. I need to consider the consequences of what's going to die if I act. You say, what's wrong with a little fantasizing? But here's the truth. Here's the truth. It starts that process. That's what's wrong with fantasizing. That's what's wrong with dwelling on stuff that is unhealthy and not good for me. Whatever I flirt with, I will fall for. Because it starts that process. Whatever I flirt with, I will fall for. I need to refocus. Instead, this is what I need to do. I need to refocus my attention. I need to stop flirting with that and refocus my attention on something healthy for me. The best time to win the battle for temptation is actually right at the beginning, before it begins. Psalm 119, I've made up my mind to obey your laws forever, no matter what. Right at the beginning, you decide, I'm going to listen to God. I'm going to trust him. I'm not going to believe the lies. I'm not going to fall for the deception. I'm not going to doubt God. I'm going to hold on to all that stuff at the beginning. And then you don't fall for it. We talked about three choices. And that explains the sort of battle that we go through for our minds. But here's the third choice that you have to make. The third choice if you want a healthy mind. So feed my mind with truth. We talked about that. Free my mind from destructive thoughts. But here's the third one. I must focus my mind on the right things. That's what you need to do if you're going to win this battle for your mind. Mental health means doing this. What do I think about? Well, the answer is always Jesus, isn't it? So I think that's a good start. Think about Jesus. You've heard about the old cliche, you become what you think about the most. It's true, you become what you think about the most. Guess what happens if Jesus is in your mind a lot? Guess what you become? Guess what you become like? I mean, I know a bunch of people out there don't necessarily come to church, but you know what? I know a bunch of people out there respect the name of Jesus. They see him as this character in history who was this amazing person. Even if you're not a believer, the concept of being like Jesus is an amazing concept. Even if you've never committed your life to Jesus, the idea that you could become like this man who is still known the world over and who billions of people follow is an amazing concept. You don't even have to be a Christian to think this is a good thing, because what you think about, you become. Keep your mind. Doesn't the Bible say that? Time and time. Fix your mind on Jesus. Fix your mind on him. So you can think about Jesus, what you think about you become. Here's another one. Think about others. Think about others. Philippians 2:4. Don't just think about your own affairs, but be interested in others too and what they are doing. Start thinking about other people. Do you realize how counterculture, here's a second countercultural thing we've said in this room today, that it is not about you. Life, the world, is not about you. It is about bigger, more wonderful things, even than you. That is about countercultural. You know, you get stoned for that out there, because quite frankly, the world is look after number one, fulfill your desires. It's all right so long as you make yourself happy. It's all about me, 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 me. And the world is not about you. It isn't. So think about others. Everything the world teaches you to think is actually the opposite. Your life is all about God and all about others. The most influential minister in my life, who I grew up with in a church, he once said to me this. He said, Phil, Christian faith, it's about God and others. You want to be a good minister? It's about God and others. I was tempted to say, what about me? But he just said that. He said, it's about God and others. And if you get those two things, isn't that what Jesus said? What's the greatest command, Jesus? Love who? God. And who else? Your neighbor as yourself. That's what he said. That's what life is about. Loving God and other people. You get those two things right in your life, you will have fulfilled, says Jesus, the whole law of Moses, the whole law of the Bible. Two things. Love God, love other people like you love yourself. And you've nailed it. It's that, so you've had a good day if you do that. God is smiling at the end of that day if you've done that. Doesn't matter whether you bagged the contract. Doesn't matter whether the boss was happy about it or not. Doesn't matter what your son or daughter did. At the end of the day, if you can say, but I loved God and I loved other people, you have done everything you can do to make the world a good place. And you can rest in peace. You can relax about it. That's the purpose of your life. Love God and love other people. It's not about you. Think about others. Think about eternity is the last one. And there is a weird idea, isn't it? That have you ever heard the phrase, you know, they're so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. Have you ever heard of that? Have you met people like that? There are some people where you think, well, yeah, they're so earthly minded, they're no earthly, heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. But the truth, I think the truth is, if I think about the people who've changed the world, if I think about the names not the celebrities, but actually the movers and shakers in our planet. They were people who were so heavenly minded, they actually did a lot of good. One of my personal heroes is Martin Luther King. Do you remember a speech he made? He said, "I have a dream." And he painted a picture of what heaven looks like, where a little white boy and a little black girl would hold hands, where hatred stopped. You know, he was just talking about heaven. He was painting a picture about what it looks like when God reigns. He's talking about justice for all people. He was talking about his passion that all of this violence and hatred and bigotry and all that sin that was going on would one day stop, and that this beautiful dream would come true. And he fought for that. He lost his life for that. He was assassinated for that. He was very heavenly minded. And he did a huge amount of good. And some of you need to be more heavenly minded. You don't think enough about eternity. You don't think enough about what is ahead. Jesus said, "May your will be done on earth as it is in." So Jesus said, "I want you to think about what should happen in heaven, and I want you to start making it happen now here." I think we don't think about eternity enough. I have a dream. So I hope you don't believe you can't control your mind. I hope that you understand how it works. I hope you understand the enemies that are arrayed against you. And there are a few. But I hope you realize the steps you can go through to change how you think. And God says you can do it. You can control your old mind. It depends what you put in it. It depends how you feed it. It depends on all those things. Let's pray together. Father, you gave us our minds. You made us in your image. One of the greatest gifts you've ever given to us is the gift of our minds, the ability to have a will and a choice. What an amazing gift. You even gave us the ability to reject you. You said, "I don't want to make you robots. I don't want to force you. You will not be my slaves. If you want me, you must choose me." Thank you for giving us our minds. We realize it's our greatest asset, and it's the greatest battleground in our lives too. It's strategic ground. We realize that the world and the flesh and the devil all team up to thwart our best intentions. So God, would you help me to put into practice what I've learned today? Would you help me to make those choices on a daily basis that I need to make? First, to feed my mind with truth all the time. All the time. I want to free my mind from destructive thoughts by taking every thought captive. Make it obedient to Jesus. Not just to let my mind run wild. Help me to be wise to temptation and realize when desire turns to doubt, to deception, to disobedience. Help me realize the process I go through. God, today I'm going to make up my mind to obey your word, whatever it takes. Believing that you love me, believing that you know what's best for me. I choose to demolish some strongholds in my life, the lies that I have believed that are not true. Help me to think about Jesus. Help me to think about others. Help me to think about eternity. When on that day, my life will be transformed in ways I cannot even comprehend. But help me start now. In your name I pray. Amen.